Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. That's right, it is the Weekly Worldview. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. The events of the week, nay, the events of the past 2 weeks. That's right. We did take Independence Day off, but I've got another Independence Day to announce. Well, we'll get to that. It's a new Independence Day in a rather far-flung part of the world that you may not have paid attention to in the past, but I have a feeling we'll all be paying some more attention to it here in the not-too-distant future. But where to start? Where to start? Casey Anthony? Kaylee Anthony? Is there anything left to be said about that case? What can you say? I mean, it's the crowning achievement, the culmination of our public school system, our justice system, and our pop culture all converging for another monumental failure. We've managed to raise a generation of people who lack the confidence in their own ability to judge to the point where they literally cannot judge anything. Because if there's anything that was obvious, it was that Casey Anthony killed that little girl and then hit her body and then lied to everybody and covered it up. But here you have it. She's not guilty. And she'll be getting out and writing a book and possibly hosting a show on Fox News. Maybe MSNBC. Perhaps TBS. We'll wait and see. Who signs the book deal and the movie deal and the TV deal with Casey Anthony. Pretty sad. Pretty sad state of affairs. So in order to not get too depressed, let's go overseas to kick off the broadcast. This is from Reuters. Thailand's community of ladyboys, I said, they are complaining that they're being marginalized in the general election there in Thailand. Because their ID picture cards were too confusing for polling officials. Yeah. They said that their ID cards are too confusing. It is the latest in a series of complaints among members of the Trans Female Association of Thailand, where transgenders and transsexuals, known collectively as Katoys, or ladyboys, yeah, they're very upset. The ladyboys, who do we quote here? Yolanda Suyanyok, who's the president of the organization aforementioned, the Trans Female Association. She said, quote, "We have big problem when we use our identity card. The picture may show a woman, but it say Mr. on the card. Or the picture may show teenage boy and the person now look like woman." So they're running into some difficulties at the polling place. They should just take a lesson from the American model for elections and just don't check anybody's ID. Just let anybody vote. But apparently they take it a little bit more seriously in Thailand. Transgenders and transsexuals are accepted in Thailand more readily than in most other countries, with one new airline hiring only ladyboys as cabin crew. Is that United? Let's see, ladyboys are especially common in cosmetic shops and health stores and, as you may imagine, in bars. Yeah. But Yolanda, the head of the Trans Female Association, says the government there in Thailand's been slow to accept them, and she's accused society of grouping transgenders, transsexuals, and homosexuals in as one and the same when each group has its own specific issues. Yeah, they've got issues. There's no doubt about that. They've got issues. Now, the government, I'm sorry. Yolanda says, quote, "The government says if they change our title and sex, it's going to make society confused." Imagine that. You think that'd be confusing, Yolanda? Anyway, Bangkok is a world center. According to Reuters, it's a world center for people seeking sex change or sex reassignment surgery. But the Tourism Authority of Thailand said it did not have exact figures on how many people visited the city of Bangkok for such, they call them operations. I call them mutilations, but You be the judge. Anyway, a lot of confusion going on at the polls in Thailand, so don't feel so bad about what's happening here. And now, on to our celebration of Independence Day from Juba, South Sudan. South Sudan celebrated its first day as an independent nation on Saturday. All right. Can we get a big cheer from the crowd? Now, listen to this. This is what's interesting. We have a quote here from one of the new governing officials there in South Sudan, South Sudan President Salva Kiir. He says, "From today, our identity is Southern and African, not Arabic and Muslim." Yeah. Oh, that was a sign that was being carried as a man walked through the crowd. So they want to identify themselves as Southern and African and not as Arabic and Muslim, which is, well, that's fine. One resident yelled, "Hallelujah," as other onlookers wiped away tears. The U.S. and Britain, among others, have announced their recognition of South Sudan as a sovereign nation, and their Independence Day is, what is today? Today is the 10th? So July 9th is apparently Independence Day in South Sudan. The Black African tribes of South Sudan, this is according to Fox News, the Black African tribes of South Sudan and the mainly Arab North battled two civil wars over more than five decades, but now South Sudan has been allowed to secede and form their own nation. No mention of Christianity anywhere in the story. So you wonder if South Sudan does not want to be recognized as Arabic or Muslim, what? Maybe they're all Scientologists? I don't know. What, are they all Jehovah's Witnesses? I think they're Christians, but Fox News, in accordance with their in accordance with their policy to avoid any mention of Christ or Christianity or anything good and wholesome, in favor of virtual pornography on their news. They don't mention Christianity as having any significant role in the struggle for South Sudan. But let me be the first to let you know that, yes, South Sudan is Christian, at least for the moment. We'll see how long the Western powers allow that to stand. All right. Now, back over to the United States for some good news. That's right. Dateline, Huntsville, Texas. That's right. Last week, Texas executed Mexican national Humberto Leal Garcia for raping and murdering a teenage girl, despite complaints from the White House and diplomats that the execution violated U.S. treaty obligations. In his final words, now, keep in mind, Barack Hussein Obama, Hillary Rodham Clinton, and a host of other perennial nitwits and morons were complaining that this gentleman should receive a stay of execution because a treaty had not been adhered to. But Mr. Leal Garcia himself, in his final words, the Wall Street Journal tells us that he accepted responsibility for the crime, saying, quote, "I have hurt a lot of people." Leal then twice added, "Viva Mexico," for whatever reason. I think he was a Mexican. Like, he came here when he was like 2 years old, became a career criminal. Raped and murdered a 16-year-old girl in 1994, if I'm not mistaken. The article doesn't go into the particulars of the crime, because who can remember? It was 1994, for crying out loud. Nobody remembers these crimes anymore. Anyway, it's a deterrent, at least in this case, right? He won't kill anyone again. But all the people who watched the execution, a goodly percentage of the people weren't even aware of justice. Maybe they weren't even born when the murder occurred. It's just disgusting. But we want to thank the great state of Texas for finally killing this bastard. It's about time. I would say well done, but I guess I'll just say done. And I guess we'll have to leave it at that, because that's all there is to it. All right. Now, what am I going to do here? Let's move on. Do I have to do this? Hillary Clinton in the headline. I kind of don't want to do this. I'm not feeling that well. I had a tooth pulled, by the way. For all you youngsters, I'm paying the price for poor oral hygiene in my misspent youth. And so I had to have a tooth pulled right from the front of my grill. And now I'm wearing a prosthetic. It feels like someone stuck a clamshell in my mouth just so I can have a fake tooth so I don't look like a hillbilly. And it's been a depressing week. I'm not enjoying life as much as... And I've got to say something about eating food. And I don't know if this is... I've noticed since the tooth became a problem, I've had to chew all my food on one side of my mouth. And there's something about stereophonic tasting, I'm convinced, because food just doesn't taste as good if you only chomp it down on one side of your mouth. And so I would move some of the food over after I'd chewed it just to get that stereophonic flavor. But it's been kind of depressing, I've got to tell you. So if I'm a little out of sorts, hopefully you'll understand why I'm a little bit out of sorts. But we'll move on. I'll do the story on Hillary despite the fact that I'm relatively depressed and all of that. Please, feel sorry for me, could you? We'll go to CNS News for this one. Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton said last week that the State Department played an instrumental role in sealing the deal for pop rock star Lady Gaga to perform at a gay pride rally in Rome, Italy. Clinton specifically pointed to a letter that David Thorne, the U.S. ambassador to Italy, sent to Lady Gaga, urging her to participate in the aforementioned homosexual pride event. Pride, I said. Yes, pride. And now, what does the Bible say about pride? Should we open up our Bibles here? Maybe I'll just do a word search just to see what the Bible says. I think it doesn't have all that much, doesn't have a lot of good to say about pride, if I'm not mistaken. But the Lady Gaga, I don't know if she performed or not. It's like nobody's really paying attention to her anymore. So she goes off to a gay pride event over there in Italy. And Hillary Clinton, surprisingly enough, now who would think that Hillary Clinton would be instrumental in getting Lady Gaga to perform at a gay pride event? Hillary Clinton, really? Is she a supporter of pride? Here we go. P-R-I-D-E in the New King James Bible. Let me see here. What's the very first mention of pride in the Bible? It's in Leviticus. I will break the pride of your power. I will make your heavens like iron and your earth like bronze. And all your strength shall be spent in vain, for your land shall not yield its produce, nor shall the trees of the land yield their fruit. That's the very first mention of pride in the Bible. Have you noticed that that lately it seems nobody tries to hide their blasphemy or their rebellion against God anymore? The homosexuals dress up, and well, they don't dress up that much. But they put on the leather and whatnot, and they call it pride, and they march down the street with giant pride signs. Let's see, what's the last mention of pride in the King James, the New King James Bible? That would be 1 John. For all that is... Oh, wait. Warning, warning, warning. Will Robinson, there are Bible verses up ahead and behind for those in the audience who advocate pluralism, diversity. We know here at the Weekly Worldview that you would not dare ever allow anyone to ever even think about possibly considering quoting a Bible verse in public. So this notice, this warning, I should say, gives you fair notice that raw, unadulterated truth is about to be uttered. 1 John, the second chapter. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of this world. Ooh, I wouldn't want to be carrying a pride sign when Jesus returns. I'll tell you that. But that's what they do. Now back to the story. Hillary Clinton, we have a quote from Hill, I believe here. Let me just set this Bible aside for just a moment. We may need it again. So just be prepared. I've already given the warning, so it's free reign now. All right, Hillary Clinton, here's what she had to say about the Pride event and Lady Gaga and all. Hillary said, quote, "Now, as many of you know, Lady Gaga is an Italian-American and a strong supporter of LGBT rights. And the organizers of the Euro Pride event desperately wanted her to perform. And a letter to her from Ambassador Thorne was instrumental in sealing the deal." Unquote. That was Hillary. Ms. Clinton, is according to CNS News, I believe it's the Christian News Service, Mrs. Clinton made the remarks at the State Department at a celebration of LGBT Pride Month. They got a whole Pride Month now. Pride Month, this festival was co-hosted by the department. And Gays and Lesbians in Foreign Affairs Agency, also known as GLIFA. GLIFA, I said, it's a group that, according to its website, represents lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender personnel and their families in the service of the U.S. State Department Diplomatic Corps. Department of State, U.S. Agency for International Development, Foreign Commercial Service, Foreign Agricultural Services, and other foreign affairs agencies and offices in the U.S. government. Is there anyone we missed? All right. On June 11th, Lady Gaga performed at a rally in the ancient Circus Maximus in Rome, Italy. The rally followed a gay pride march right through the streets of the city of Rome, for crying out loud. It's the last days of Rome, huh? I mean, hasn't this all happened before? I mean, last time the homosexuals were holding pride marches through the streets of Rome, the barbarians were at the gates, ladies and gentlemen. I think that's Hillary's official theme song here on the Weekly Worldview anymore. And appropriate it is. Now, speaking of despicable women, and I love women in general, don't get me wrong, it's just that that story of the despicable Hillary Clinton promoting the despicable Lady Gaga amongst the despicable leads right into this story. In February of 2009, according to CSMonitor.com, I have no idea who these people are, but I heard this story on, well, just about every radio show, every news broadcast. So it's been double and triple sourced. But I pulled this down from www.csmonitor.com. In February of 2009, Atlanta Superintendent Beverly Hall was named Superintendent of the Year in San Francisco. Well, Miss Hall has now stepped down from her post days before the release of a report that documented widespread cheating by teachers and administrators in the 55,000 student Atlanta Public School District, where she now is, was a superintendent. And so you can see, as I said, the Casey Anthony verdict is just a culmination of the product of your government education system, and it's rife with scandal, cheating, and just all manner of untoward behavior. I don't want to be too blunt or coarse here on the broadcast. It's quite untoward. And speaking of untoward, let's go to Chicago, Illinois, hometown of Barry Ho and his M.O. This is according to WLSAM, which is probably a radio or a TV station. It could all be made up. I don't know. From Chicago. Oh, I see. They just pulled this down off the Associated Press. This is an Associated Press wire story. Illinois will assess only reading and arithmetic now that high school juniors will no longer be tested on their writing skills during standardized exams. Cutting the writing exams will save about $2.4 million amid the state's budgetary shortfalls. Writing tests for elementary and middle school students were dropped last year, and now they're dropping them amongst the high school juniors. School Superintendent Christopher Koch, or Koch, says, quote, "We're trying to minimize the damage of the cuts." You know, all these governments are having to cut. And so where do they cut? Well, you don't have to be a genius. They cut the fire, the police, the schools, public health. Anything that makes it painful for the average person in the street. They don't cut all the redundant patronage jobs that they've given to their cousins and nephews and mistresses and all that. They cut where it'll be hurt, where it will be felt. The article from WLSAM says Illinois isn't alone in struggling with how to offer an effective education for less money, on and on and on, yada, yada, yada. And here it goes, folks. Now, this will be the hue and cry of the leftists and the statists, the progressives and the ruling class, is they're going to make sure that we feel the pain of these cuts, and they're going to shout them from the rooftops. It's all propaganda against cutting spending. But if you really want to save money in the public education sector, how about eliminating the public education sector and asking parents to take responsibility for their own children, telling wives to go back home because the workplace is horrible? I'm hoping you women have realized that by now. In the 40 years of women's liberation, have you ever come home and sat down and just stared at your dinner and said, this is horrible. I have to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning. I have to be to work by 8. I get a half hour for lunch. They ride me like a rented mule all day, and this is equality. Anyway, the women should go back home, and the kids, the public schools should be either bulldozed or turned into condos or manufacturing facilities. And that would save countless billions of dollars and tens of thousands of lives and souls not destroyed by the government education sector. And then nobody would be able to cry about it because the whole system would be gone and all the people employed by it would be busy, too busy looking for real jobs rather than complaining about cuts. But you're going to hear a lot of that over the coming couple of weeks, how bad the cuts are going to be and how bad they're going to hurt. And so at least me, myself and my family, we've chosen not to rely on the government in any sense other than the roads, I think, is the only thing we rely on them for. And they're pretty lousy, to be honest with you. Pretty lousy with the roads. All right. So not to be too depressed about the state of government spending, government schools, let's move into the personhood file this week. From earnedmedia.org, Planned Parenthood, well, let's just, Topeka, Kansas. This is from the week before last. A new Kansas abortion law will close one of the state's three remaining abortion facilities. However, Planned Parenthood of Kansas and Mid-Missouri President Peter Brownlee is optimistic following a 20-hour inspection of the organization's Overland Park, Kansas location. He says, quote, the findings of the inspection indicate that we will be in full compliance with the abortion facility licensing regulations when they go into effect on July 1st. Thus, I believe we will be granted a license at the Overland Park child killing facility operated by Planned Parenthood. And indeed, they were granted a license this Thursday past, week before last. This is misguided pro-lifers trying to introduce so much regulation. The size of the room and the height of the carpet and the shape of the desks. And, you know, they try to pass enough regulations that they can shut down some clinics. But they weren't able to shut down this clinic in Kansas. So there still is a child killing facility right there in the Kansas City metropolitan area. I've got a quote here from the Personhood Kansas Committee there in Kansas. His name is Bruce Guerin, and he says, quote, the legislature has passed every abortion regulation imaginable. No baby is safe from the grasp of the abortionist until the personhood of every human being is affirmed by law, unquote. Got nothing to add to that. Pretty effective. He went on to say, quote, laws that regulate abortion may temporarily disable the abortion industry, but they do not end it. Anyone with the resources to do so can and will continue to kill children in the state of Kansas. The people of Kansas deserve to have their voices heard, and we renew our call to recognize the God-given and inalienable rights of unborn children, unquote. That is Personhood Kansas Committee Chairman Bruce Guerin. So what more is to be said? Very, very effective. I wish them luck there in Kansas. I think we're probably gearing up for round three here in Colorado, although that may be a secret. In which case, we're lucky that nobody is listening to this broadcast. Otherwise, the word might get out. But let's just keep it between us, okay? All right. Now, speaking of the end of civilization, was I speaking about the end of civilization? Well, in a roundabout way, I was talking about the legalized murder of innocent people here in the United States. So the end of civilization, well, it comes every day for those children and for their mothers and the people involved in the killings. They're no longer civilized. And, well, the rest of the country, can the rest of the country be far behind? Let's go to Riverside, California. Riverside County Supervisor Jeff Stone has proposed that Riverside County lead a campaign for as many as 13 Southern California counties to secede from the state of California. Yeah. Stone said in his statement last week that Riverside, Imperial, San Diego, Orange, San Bernardino, Kings, Kern, Fresno, Tulare, Inyo, Madera, Mariposa, and Mono counties should form the new state of South California. That's what he said. I would go with Southern California. I mean, it's rather well established already. But you notice they left out L.A. And L.A. is not a part of Northern California. But, I mean, who wants to get stuck with L.A. County in your country? Man, and there's so many counties here, that could definitely be a country. It's probably bigger than a state, although it probably is bigger than most countries, for crying out loud. Jeff Stones, the Riverside County supervisor, says, quote, "Our taxes are too high. Our schools don't educate our children well enough. Unions and other special interests have more clout in the legislature than the general public." And so, unquote. And so he unveiled his proposal on the day Governor Jerry Moonbeam Brown signed budget legislation that will divert about $14 million from four of Riverside's newest counties. So the state's coming in and trying to ameliorate their budget deficit by raping these counties of all their finances. And they're just standing up and saying they've basically had enough. They want out. They want to secede. And who knows, they might start a movement. There'll be a large swath of the Southwest that will end up defecting to Texas. He says that the new state, South California, well, we'll see about that. The new state would have no term limits, only a part-time legislature, and limits on property taxes. Now, that's all window dressing, Mr. Stone. We appreciate your efforts. But I think there's you might want to make a statement about returning to the founding principles of the nation in the state of California, the moral and ethical principles that have guided the nation, or at least did until we found ourselves at the precipice of utter destruction, as we find ourselves today. And Mr. Stone, if you don't lay that foundation, all the window dressing about term limits and property taxes, they don't mean anything if you can't guarantee the basic God-given rights of your citizens. But maybe they'll get around to that in South California. Yeah, we'll see about that. Okay. Now, into the domestic tranquility file. An officer down in St. Petersburg, Florida, a veteran officer with a clean record is being investigated by the St. Petersburg Police Department after he warned the father of a robbery victim about a dangerous part of town. Yes, Officer Stu Crisco allegedly warned St. Petersburg father Bob Esposito about letting his 16-year-old daughter hang around the North Shore pool at night. Esposito's daughter was one of five teens robbed by a group of armed men at about 10:30 p.m. on a recent weeknight. Well, he's in trouble now for bad-mouthing the city of St. because he told somebody there was a bad part that you shouldn't hang around at night. Yeah, Esposito said of the North Shore pool area downtown St. Petersburg, quote, "I wouldn't come down here at night," unquote, he said to the father of the 16-year-old girl. Well, that comment was inadvertently relayed to his superior when Esposito was following up with the police department. The department then launched an investigation into a charge of disparaging comments against the city. So telling the truth about the bad part of town is now disparaging remarks against the city, at least in St. Petersburg, or it may be. They're investigating. Crisco faces a possible suspension, even if his comments were true. So he can't go to court and defend himself by citing the rapes, the robberies, the murders that occur in that particular part of town, the drug dealing. He can't, even if it's true, he could face a possible suspension, because what's true doesn't matter as much as what is politically correct or politically authorized anymore. The mayor, Bill Foster, said, quote, "I always want to know my officers are representing this city in a very positive light." Despite the robberies, the murders, the rapes, and the drug dealing that goes on, we like to put a positive spin on everything so that we have a positive mental outlook. All of that. Now, WTSP, which is the television and or radio station from which I got this story, they say that while St. Petersburg violent crime statistics are high, more than one in 100 residents will be a victim of a crime in any given year. They say the numbers have dropped every year since 2007. Through the first 5 months of 2011, the city of St. Petersburg has seen a drop in every single crime statistic there is. Well, except murder. But, you know, what's a few murders between friends? It's still a delightful place to live. And how dare anyone tell anyone to stay out of a certain part of our beautiful town? Just disgusting. Just sad. It's a sad state of affairs, folks. If the police are not allowed to tell the truth to protect the people, it's like you're throwing the people to the wolves. And when the government tells the police to lie to people, well, where do we go from there?
The devil says.
Weekly World View. My name is Doug McBurney. I am your host, and I'm so glad to have you aboard this week. Now we're going to get to the whining and the moaning and the complaining that you're going to be overwhelmed with over the next couple weeks as we approach the debt limit. That's right. Are you as scared as I am? Hold on to your seats. Buckle a seatbelt if you can. We're going to go over the edge. The Republicans are going to take us over the edge, according to the Democrats. And the Democrats are going to take us over the edge, according to the Republicans, even though both of them stole the money and spent it all. So how can we expect these two groups of criminals to solve the problem? Anyway, let's move on from the Sacramento Bee, Washington, D.C. Congress has 1 month to raise the nation's borrowing limit or the government will default on its debt, according to the Treasury Department. The United States reached the $14.3 trillion limit back in May. Higher revenue and accounting maneuvers have allowed the government to keep paying its bills for the moment, but the end could come at any time. Catastrophic. Catastrophic. Ripple. A ripple effect through the markets that could collapse us, plunge us into a double-dip recession, or even worse, possibly a depression. Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner, according to the Sacramento Bee, urged Congress to raise the debt limit and, quote, avoid the catastrophic economic and market consequences of a default crisis. Now, the U.S. government, according to the paper, will continue to take in revenue after the August 2nd deadline passes, but it won't be enough to meet its obligations. Well, maybe it's time to eliminate some of those obligations and not the interest on the debt, because that would be stealing. We sold those bonds. We owe those people that money. We owe those Chinese generals the return on their investment. So we shouldn't stiff them. But again, there are the aforementioned patronage jobs and redundant, less than essential personnel that could be eliminated. You know, when they have a hurricane, all the non-essential personnel are told to stay home, and it's like 75% of the government. Maybe we could start with some of those obligations so that we could pay our bills. Am I mistaken, or does the executive and legislative branches not have the tools to cut some obligations starting, like, tomorrow? Do they not have that ability? I'm no expert, no constitutional expert, no expert on government. But I would think that we could maybe cut some obligations. Maybe not. Maybe not. I'm sorry I brought it up. I didn't mean to scare you. I know you've got to be white-knuckle right now. Just terrified of the catastrophic economic and market consequences of a default crisis. Please, please let us spend again or it will hurt you. Anyway, in May, just one example of that this article gives, but in the month of May, the government took in $175 billion in revenue and spent almost $233 billion. So somebody needs to find like $65 billion to cut. You telling me we can't find $65 billion to cut a month? Come on, people. According to this article in the Sacramento Bee, the government faces several payments in August that will necessitate a higher borrowing limit. Treasury officials say that, about $23 billion in Social Security payments must be made on August 3rd, and $30 billion in interest payments is due on August 15th. Oh, my goodness, there's nothing we can do. We're going to have to raise the debt limit and let the heroin addicts have more heroin, or they're going to get sick and throw up all over us. Something you'll have to have one of those ponchos. A default, according to Sacramento Bee, would likely raise interest rates and threaten the economic recovery. Economic recovery? Okay, well, when the recovery is this week, we certainly don't want it threatened. That's for sure. But it would seem to me that a reduction in expenditures might be in order. But perhaps that's too simplistic. Now, finally, the SACB tells us an increase in the borrowing limit of about $2.4 trillion would carry the government through the end of 2012. That would enable Congress to avoid another vote on the issue until after the presidential election. And let me tell you what, folks, that's what's going to happen. We're going to vote for more heroin for Congress and the president. I shouldn't say more heroin for Congress and the executive branch so that they can stay well until after the election, at which point they may be ready to enter rehab. But until then, they need more dope. You know, I believe that Democrats are going to schnooker a willfully gullible Republican Party. Republicans are then going to blame the coming economic slowdown on the Democrats. Republicans will win the presidency and the Congress and begin implementing Obamacare and managing the welfare state. They're not going to dismantle any of it. They're just going to manage it more efficiently. They're going to get by on like 3 balloons of heroin a day, whereas the Democrats were like up to 5 balloons every day. So anyway, thankfully, we've got the Republicans riding to the rescue. All right. Now, another scandal that could bring down the president. This is, I think, the 8th scandal that should have brought down the presidency of Barry Ho and his M.O. and all of the addicts that he surrounds himself with. A new member of Congress has said that a special prosecutor needs to review the actions of Attorney General Eric Holder regarding the Fast and Furious gun scandal where weapons were sold to carriers known to supply Mexican drug lords. That's right, the U.S. government sold guns to people who were known to be supplying Mexican drug lords. That's the long and short of it. Why did they do it? I can't figure that out for the life of me. I watched a one-hour special on this the other night. I'm still confused about why. Unless they were trying to, maybe they were trying to imply that it's U.S. guns that are going into Mexico that are the problem. And here, we'll show you how. They sold the guns and now they've got all the dead bodies. And they say, see, we were right. We need better gun control. If half of what has been alleged here is true, it's like a really bad political dream. A criminal one, as a matter of fact. U.S. Representative Alan West, the aforementioned new member of Congress, a Tea Party favorite, said the roads that appear to lead to those responsible for the botched gun-running program that was supposed to trace guns to high-ranking drug lords are alarming. And he said, quote, at least the president needs to realize that Eric Holder needs to be removed from the Department of Justice, or else it appears President Obama is complicit and in approval of the actions of his attorney general. Wow. Barry Ho is so lucky that he is a liberal. Because if he were not a liberal, he would have gone down with, I think, the second scandal, which I forget what it was now. But this one would surely topple him, as there's more crimes here, than G. Gordon Liddy could have come up with in a wild dream, in his wildest imagination. So we'll keep our eye on the gunrunner scandal, but... You know, not, like all the other scandals and questions and the birth certificate and the and all of the other dissimulation participated in by this White House, none of it will bring them down. None of it. Only an election will bring them down, and the odds are that will not either. I know, I hate to be pessimistic, and I hate to be a bummer, but as I survey the landscape, political, cultural, moral... It's Barry Ho for another 4 years, folks. Yeah, get used to it, America. You're getting the president you deserve. let's see. Now let's go to, here's something else on foreign policy. From the culture file from Fox News, Henry Valendia, a 27-year-old professional salsa dancer from Caracas, now living in New Jersey, legally married U.S. citizen Josh Vandeveer, a 30-year-old. They don't say if he's a salsa dancer or what he does, but he's a Connecticut resident. They got married last year, but due to the Defense of Marriage Act, Vandeveer was not allowed to sponsor Valendia for a green card in the same way a normal person would, because he's a queer. And the Defense of Marriage Act says that, you can't bring in queers as if they're your husband or wife. They're queers, for crying. Well, it doesn't say that, but that's the way I read it. I mean, they're freaks of nature. They're deviants. They're immoral. They're promoting an immoral lifestyle, and we don't need that here in America. Got plenty of it. Thank you very much. So this poor young couple just, you know, starry-eyed in love, and he can't bring his dance partner in. The Department of Homeland Security, nevertheless, decided to drop deportation efforts against one of these two queers last week. Valendia told Fox News that last week's ruling was a big uplifting moment and the product of years' worth of hard work on behalf of the couple's attorney, Lavi Soloway, a Jewish attorney, for crying out loud, defending the importation of deviant homosexuals into the country. What's going on with the modern, what's with modern Judaism, for crying out loud? It's just a sad state of affairs. The first homo, the salsa dancer, he said, quote, "I can now be with Josh, my husband, in this country without fear of being torn apart. It's like our first day building up our life together. But we know the fight is not over. We're going to keep fighting for marriage equality for all the couples who are in the same situation." Unquote. Salsa dancer. Yeah. President Obama, according to the Fox News article, President Obama reiterated during a news conference last week that he's instructed the Justice Department to stop defending the Defense of Marriage Act in court. And he said he supported gay equality, but repeated his position in support of civil unions instead of marriage. Have you ever, like, spent a week at the home of a homosexual couple? It could hardly be called a civil union. I mean, in between bouts of bickering and spitting and arguing about the decorating and throwing empty bottles of vodka at each other, the average homosexual household is anything but civil. At least in my very limited experience. Although I have hung out with some homos, but not for very long. So I didn't want to get hit with an ashtray. Now what happened here? I lost my place. Oh, President Obama supports civil unions, not gay marriage. At the same time, Immigration and Customs Enforcement is urging its agents to consider a lengthy list of factors in determining whether to move ahead with deportation proceedings in a move to crack down on illegal immigrant criminals, but give agents the leeway to dismiss cases against those who haven't committed non-immigration crimes. You know, like sodomizing another guy. I mean, that's still a crime in some states. But probably not in New Jersey or Connecticut. In fact, I think it might be required now if you want to move there. All right, but don't worry, folks. I mean, that massive advance of civilization that we just covered in New Jersey, civilization marches on. Meanwhile, Tripoli, Libya, defiant Muammar Gaddafi, threatened last week to carry out attacks in Europe against the homes, against the offices, and the families of NATO invaders if NATO doesn't halt its campaign of airstrikes against him in Libya. Gaddafi spoke from an unknown location, which means that things aren't going that well for Muammar. But boy, you got to give Muammar some credit for staying power. I mean, here's a guy who said, "I will not leave unless you drag my dead body out of Tripoli." And I think he's going to make good on that. So, I mean, you give some credit where credit is due. At least in this respect, he's being honest, which is less than anyone involved in the NATO, what do you call it? The NATO effort, the kinetic NATO activity against him. I'm starting to develop a grudging respect for Muammar Gaddafi. That's how bad the government's gotten amongst the Western allies. You just start looking at Muammar. I mean, you look at Muammar Gaddafi and Hillary Clinton. Who would you rather have a drink with? Be honest. Right? I'm saying Mumar, even though I would need an interpreter. Anyway, it was not clear immediately, according to Fox News, it was not immediately clear whether Gaddafi could make good on such threats. And I don't know where Fox News gets that, because he's made good on those threats before when he blew up that airplane over Scotland. You remember that? So my guess is that, yeah, if Gaddafi can ever get out from under the pile of rubble he's under, he'll make good on those threats. It's unfortunately, folks, I know none of us support this this ill-conceived kinetic military action in Libya, but it is intensely important that we kill Muammar Gaddafi. And I'm against all the morons who are doing it and how they're doing it, but they better get it done, folks. Because there are just certain unwritten rules of foreign policy is that when you start blowing up the president of a country's compound, you better kill him. And so they better get it done, and they need to get it done post-haste, for crying out loud. It's Libya. You remember, I said we should let the French go in. But the French didn't go in, or they didn't go in alone. Anyway, it's all just a disaster. In the past, according to Fox News, Gaddafi supported various militant groups, including the IRA, several Palestinian factions. In recent years, however, Gaddafi was believed to have severed his ties with Muslim extremist groups when he moved to reconcile with Europe and the United States. Gaddafi cracked down in the late 1990s on the Islamist Libyan Islamic Fighting Group, which sought to replace his regime with the Islamic State. And you know what I can't help but think? And see if maybe, I don't know if I can put this together for you. But it seems to me that the invasion of Libya, the reason it looks so harebrained and messed up, is because the point wasn't necessarily get rid of Gaddafi. It was to set up a doctrine by which Israel could be threatened, coerced, and possibly even eliminated from the map. Is Libya the setup for Israel? Is it a doctrine they want in place when an Israeli-Palestinian, what's the big dream, the side-by-side, two states in harmony? When a Palestinian state is declared by the UN this fall, is Libya and the doctrine used to invade Libya, will that be used to justify perhaps even an invasion of Israel?
Hello, hello, Grandpa?
It's science!
View. Doug McBurney, your humble host. We're rounding third and headed for home. And we pull a story here from the culture file. Dateline Denver, Colorado. Did I say enough about Gaddafi? And I don't know if I've got it all figured out there, folks. Just all very confusing. It makes me want to stop reading the news. But I won't, because I know you need me, and I want to be here for you. Dateline Denver, Colorado. There are now more medical marijuana dispensaries in Denver than there are Starbucks. I'm not making this up. And there's a Starbucks, folks, on every corner here. I mean, you can't leave your house and go 1 mile in any direction in the entire metro area without hitting a Starbucks. And as I have documented here on this show, it's getting to be that way with medical marijuana dispensaries. And now it's official. There are now nearly 300 medical marijuana dispensaries for all the sick young white males suffering as they are. Many of Colorado's medical marijuana dispensaries offer a free joint to new customers. Wow. Now, how many doctors offer you a free shot of morphine when you come in? Okay, does anyone think maybe this isn't medicine? Maybe, possibly, a free joint? I mean, come on.
Good service.
Yeah, I mean, that is good customer service, though. Yeah, that is smart business. Anyway, Denver potheads... Patients even have a professional marijuana critic now in a local newspaper. Wow. So he goes into, he's like the secret shopper of the medical marijuana business. He goes into the these medical facilities and he samples the medicine and the customer service, and then he writes a review in a newspaper called Westword.
That's far right.
That's, yeah, so Westword, obviously, knowing that they have the most stoned readership in possibly the world outside of the Netherlands. Is it the Netherlands? Were they legalized? I can't remember. It's one of those Scandinavian. Anyway, they got a big stoner audience. So anyway, we have a marijuana critic now. His weekly weed purchase is paid for by the Denver Westword, the popular alternative weekly that hired this fella after its editors realized they were serving one of the most stoned readerships in America. I didn't write that. That's from thedaily.com. But it is absolutely true. So he buys all this dope, and what do you think? So he gets back to the office, he writes up his critique, and then all the folks sit around there at the at Westword and use portions of Westword to roll joints. And then whatever. All right. So there you have it. Denver continues its rapid decline into insignificance and, generally an unfriendly business environment, because who wants to hire someone who's stoned all the time? Never get anything done. Eats everything out of the freezer, doesn't get anything done, and then complains. Who needs that? I think businesses will be fleeing Denver for the lack of, and I'm not talking about like the world's greatest workers. I'm just talking about people who aren't wasted. Companies are going to vie to find workers who are not wasted. And in order to do that, they're going to have to go, somewhere else besides Denver. And go they will, I do believe. All right. Now let's go back to the international scene. We're running out of time. I hate that. From WorldNet Daily, this is another report on the Gaza flotilla. John Grayson, a Canadian film director and Gaza flotilla activist, told Israeli newspaper Haaretz in an interview that homosexuality is not a barrier to participating in the upcoming Gaza voyage. And in fact, he and other flotilla participants have created an unofficial queer caucus on the Gaza flotilla right there on board one of the ships. Yeah. So if you're going to participate in the Gaza flotilla and you're packing your bags this week, that's a ship you might want to avoid. Or I suppose if you're participating in that flotilla, that's the boat you want to go right over to. Anyway, the Canadian director related how not only is he part of what he calls an unofficial queer caucus aboard the Tahrir, that's the ship, but every boat participating in the upcoming flotilla has queers. Now, he said queers. I didn't say queers. Don't get mad at me for saying queers. That's what the queer said. I'm just quoting the queer, okay? Anyway, there had been rumors that homosexuals were going to be kept out because of the Muslim influence, but apparently the Muslims and the homosexuals are happy to work together in order to go against Israel and the United States. So they'll be happy to work together. And the Muslims will be more than happy to defile the homosexuals amongst themselves until they cut their heads off at the end of this whole thing. Well, we'll see how that... Anyway, this Canadian director says there's all kinds of queers on this flotilla. He says, quote, "This is the common sense in human nature. This flotilla, who knows? Maybe when we'll get back from the flotilla, we'll have even more queers." Well, that's one thing. I mean, if you coop up a bunch of homosexuals and heterosexuals on a boat, send them out to sea, I guarantee you when he comes back, there's going to be more queers. I mean, we have evidence. I mean, the British Navy, for crying out loud. I'm to anyone who's currently in the British Navy and you're not a pervert, I apologize. Yeah. No, Churchill said it, that the British Navy operates on three things: sodomy, rum, and the lash. And apparently the Gaza flotilla will have its fair share of sodomy, at least. Although I think the Muslims wouldn't appreciate the rum, but they'll have the lash, I'm sure. This homosexual director teaches film. He teaches film, so he's a big part of destroying the workforce of tomorrow. He teaches film at the University of New York. I'm sorry. He teaches film at the York University in Toronto. And in 2009, he canceled the screening of his documentary Covered at the Toronto International Film Festival as a protest against the screening of a series of movies about Tel Aviv marking the city's centennial. So what's this queer got against the Jews, you got to wonder? Why do queers hate the Jews so much? Oh, that's right. It's because of they're in rebellion against God. You know, that's so often the answer to so many questions. When people say why this and why that, it's because they're in active, open rebellion against God. That's why. That answers the question, and that's the end. Anyway, so we've got God-hating Jews, God-hating fags who are aligned with Islamists because they both hate the Jews and they both hate God. But when they're finished with Israel, and I'm afraid that this current iteration of Israel, the one, you know, since 1948, it may be on the verge of being finished. I mean, how do you think the queers will fare in the new Muslim caliphate? Oh, yeah, they'll have plenty of parties because we all know that what the Muslims do behind the thick camel hair blankets there in their tents. We all know what Muslim men do to other men all the time. But in the light of day, they'll chop their heads off. All right. But more an update on the flotilla. We're almost to the end. I got all this news left. Anyway, an update on the flotilla. This is according to Jerusalem Post. The protest flotilla to the Gaza Strip seems to have come to an end. And it seemed to have happened last Thursday when organizers decided to send more than half of the activists who were there in Athens home. You remember, the boats are all tied up there in Greece, and Greece has refused to allow them to leave. Well, organizers decided to send more than half of them home. It could be because, you know, for syphilis shots or something like that, but they did send them home. The remaining activists said they would ponder their options and continue to get high and have sex. I made that last part. Well, I didn't make it up. I'm the one who observed it. It wasn't in the J-Post article. The U.S. flagged vessel, the Audacity of Hope, that was one of the Gaza flotilla boats. The Audacity of Hope. Where have we heard that before? I can't recall. The U.S. flagged vessel, the Audacity of Hope, gave up waiting for Greek approval late last Wednesday night, and almost all of the 50 activists who signed up for its voyage toward Gaza returned to the U.S. the following day. Yeah. So, folks, just like Barry Ho and his MO and all the left-wing agitators, they can be defeated if we stand up and if we're willing to fight and do the right thing. Don't let these people intimidate you. Even the Greeks have managed to dig down and find enough courage to say, no, we're not going to allow you to go start a war with Israel. You know, and Greece has plenty of problems. And they probably also have plenty of Jewish businessmen and business contacts. Otherwise, they could care less. Bunch of deviant scum. Anyway, I've got a quote here from a guy named Araf. He was aboard the Canadian ship Tahrir. Araf said that while the collapse of the flotilla was definitely a blow, it was only a small obstacle. And that the organizers would continue working to break Israel's sea blockade of the Gaza Strip. To which I say, shut up, you hippie faggot, and go back home to your mom's basement in Toronto or wherever you're from. Just get out. Am I allowed to say faggot, or is that... That's probably considered coarse. We may edit that out of the final version here. Let's see. I'm out of time. So let me... here we go. I'm almost out of time. I could never... Could never be out of time for this story. Mayor Bloomberg of New York will officiate at the wedding of two top city officials on July 24th. Isn't that great news? The mayor's going to officiate a wedding. But that's the first day that New York's same-sex marriage law goes into effect, and it'll be two guys. Yeah. So the Democrat, Michael Bloomberg, and promoter of destructive policies and now destructive lifestyles, he was once a Democrat, and he's a Republican, independent. But one thing's for sure, he likes fags. He will marry his Consumer Affairs Commissioner, John, and his Chief Policy Advisor, John. Two Johns are going to get married by Mayor Bloomberg. The ceremony will take place at the mayor's mansion, and Bloomberg has agreed to wear leather undergarments and have both names tattooed on an undisclosed location on his body. He's also prepared to leave his wife and marry into a three-way marriage with these two guys. If we're not sure that he supports marriage equality, he's pledged that he's willing to do that. No comment from his wife, although she was seen seen shopping for new shoes there in New York City. She had no comment. New York City announced last Wednesday that it would extend the hours of the city clerk's office to remain open on the day that homosexuals are allowed to start applying for licenses to sodomize one another. By the way, the first day homos will be married in New York, it's a Sunday. Now, normally, you know, offices in the government, they're not open on Sunday. Because government workers are the biggest slackers on the planet. They love their weekends. But in order to start marrying off the queers, they're going to open the New York offices there at the clerk's office on a Sunday and defile the day our Lord rose by marrying off homosexuals. Right in your face. Why would they do that? It's because they're in active, open, shameless rebellion against God, the creator of the universe, and the judge of all these deviants. So here we have a quote from Mayor Bloomberg. He says, quote, "This is a historic moment for New York, a moment many couples have waited years and years and even decades to see, and we are not going to make them wait one day longer than they have to. Oh, to see it, it's going to be so beautiful." Unquote. Did you hear Mayor Bloomberg? It started like he was turning into a homosexual right there during that quote. All right, all I've got time for now is some brief headlines. North Korea has shut down its universities for the better part of the next year, possibly to quell protests, but also because they might have to go out and shoot rabbits and try to feed themselves. It's just, it's horrible. Horrible what's going on in North Korea. And we have sat by. The Western powers have sat by for 60 years and let that country degenerate, and we should be ashamed of ourselves. I know we're not the policemen of the world, but here we got a guy starving millions of people, children, women, to death. And you're telling me we can't find it somehow? Anyway, it's a commentary on America and the Western powers in general that are just a giant with no power anymore. We're big economically. We're a big influence. We pump plenty of movies and pornography and Lady Gaga songs out to the whole world. But when it comes down to actually being able to do the right thing, we can't do it. Because we just don't have the wherewithal anymore. Wall Street Journal, new evidence that Tehran is funneling new weapons to our enemies in Iraq and Afghanistan, blowing up and killing American troops. I've got a quote here from Major General James Buchanan, the U.S. military's top spokesman in Iraq. Listen to this. Here's what he said in an interview. He said, "I think we are likely to see these Iranian-backed groups continue to maintain high attack levels, but they are not going to deter us from doing everything we can to help the Iraqi security forces." Nothing about winning. Nothing about killing and destroying the enemy and putting the fear of God into the heart of anyone who would think about shipping arms to our enemies. Nothing about that. We're just going to do everything we can, and they're not going to stop us from doing everything we can, because we're doing everything we can. And we're going to continue to do everything we can. Unbelievable. You know, it's like my 10th grade home economics teacher is running the military. It's unbelievable. Here's a great headline going into the summer here. Al-Qaeda wants to surgically implant bombs into terrorists. Yeah. Intelligence indicates, this is according to CBS in New York, Al-Qaeda wants to surgically implant bombs directly into a suicide bomber's body. Noted New York plastic surgeon Howard Bellin said a bomb could easily be sewed into anyone's body surgically. That's great. Okay, are we getting what we deserve, America? Huh? We don't have the ability to do right. We don't have the ability to fight back the forces of Islam driving for the caliphate. We just don't have it in us anymore. Are we getting what we deserve? Are we going to have now x-ray scanners and body cavity searches before we get on airplanes? Is that what we deserve? No. I posit that we are getting what our governing officials deserve. They don't fly commercial, folks. We're getting what they deserve. And payback, well, I mean, you know the saying. So anyway. Another delightful headline from the Wall Street Journal. The U.S. Appeals Court in California last week ordered the Obama administration to allow homosexuals to serve openly in the military. So the thing about homosexuality or homosexuals in the lobby that advanced that lifestyle, they want everything and they want it right now. And they are willing to kill you and tear you to pieces if they don't get it. And they're getting it in the military. What do I have here? A colonel in the Army says, quote, "We will, of course, comply with the orders of the court and are taking immediate steps to inform the field of this order." Since when did an appeals court in California start giving orders to the military, for crying out loud? I mean, I think this colonel, before he got this job, he had to have his testicles surgically removed. Speaking of surgical, that's just embarrassing. I mean, I couldn't I would say, you know what? I got to resign my commission. I'm out of here. This is embarrassing. From WorldNet Daily, Israel let me just read you the story. Regional analysts say Israeli officials are thinking about reoccupying the Sinai Peninsula. Sorry about that. I almost choked there. I think it was that last story. That colonel, that almost made me physically ill. I apologize. Anyway, back to the Sinai. Israel's considering reoccupying Sinai because of the growing prospect of infiltration by Al-Qaeda, radical Muslims, and other militants such as Hamas, and the inability of the Egyptian military to guarantee security and all of that. Some 400 Al-Qaeda militants are known to have infiltrated the Sinai with the help of Hamas Palestinians for bordering Gaza. Egyptian police are abandoning their remote stations and checkpoints, which are coming under increased attacks from Bedouin tribesmen. Yeah, that means Muslim fighters. Yeah. They say the Sinai, according to senior Israeli official, the Sinai is already known as a lawless land, and there's a real concern that if the Egyptians don't get the Sinai back under their control, it could develop into a major threat to Israel and then be annexed by Israel. They should have never left the Sinai. Anyway, here we go. Listen to this. A Saudi man mounted a prayer platform at the Grand Mosque in Islam's holiest shrine, the holiest of holy shrines in the Gulf Kingdom, and told thousands of worshippers that he was a prophet and he was their savior before he was seized by police. The 36-year-old man, identified only as Sami, mounted the podium and delivered his brief, fiery speech. He said, "I am Al-Mahdi Al-Muntathar. I am a prophet sent by God to save and guide you." And then he was overpowered by police and arrested. It was the latest in a series of incidents involving persons claiming to be Al-Mahdi Al-Muntathar. Now, Muslims believe that Imam Al-Mahdi, dubbed the ultimate savior of mankind, will eventually reappear as a great reformer who will destroy the beliefs of injustice and ignorance and fill this earth with fairness after it has been filled with injustice and oppression. Yeah, after. That's the part we're in right now, apparently, with the Muslims. They're filling the world with injustice and oppression, and then they're going to get on to their savior, who is probably the Antichrist. Not to put too fine on a point on it, but that's it, folks. That's the Weekly Worldview for this week. I want to thank my friends at KGOV, at Personhood USA, and at American Right to Life, and, of course, my other brother, Darryl, who makes it all happen. Here at the Weekly Worldview Studios, I'll be back with you next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.